The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 19th of October, 2020. On the podcast today, Tony Sirichik, Chief Executive Officer of Salt Lake Potash, provides an update on their first lake, which is Lake Way, and discusses two new board appointments. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about Ixico, AB Dynamics, and San Leon Energy. And as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you also see lots of other content. Check it out. We've got an article there on 88 Energy, one on E Energy, one on Europa Metals. What else is there? There's a must-watch Vox exclusive Capital Market Summit. And this is where you've got Paul Hill chatting on video to Martin Gilbert, David Buick, Justin Urquhart-Stewart, and Chris Watling. And as always, on the front page there, you can check out a COVID-19 index. Biggest riser on that index today is Inspiration Healthcare, up 12 or 13% to 74.5. And biggest faller is React Group, down 7 or 8% to 1.175%. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Sirichik, CEO of Salt Lake Potash, SO4 ticker. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me back, Justin.
Yeah, you've had a couple of bits of news out. You've had your quarterly report last week and today, operational and potash experience added to the board. So we'll dig into that, as always, and explain in the significance of that. So first and foremost, anyone listening who's not heard of you, just explain what you're about, if you could, Tony.
Sure. Company SO4 is an Australian, Western Australian-based company that has a portfolio of nine potassium-rich salt lakes in what we call the Goldfields region of Western Australia, just north of Kalgoorlie. We are rapidly developing our first project called Lake Way in the northern region of those lakes, and that will be in production within the next 4 or 5 months, early next year. Around about March, we'll be putting out sulfate of potash, a premium potassium fertilizer, into the market.
Excellent stuff. And you're hoping to, what, produce, you're getting up to, of course, you start the run-up, and you're hoping to get up to 245,000 tonnes of per annum, what was that, 111 million EBITDA Aussie, that is, which is about 60 million UK sterling. And of course, you've got this, you know, nine other lakes, but of course, you're taking time to go through that. So what, at the moment, I've seen some pictures coming out from you on social media just showing the size of this project outside Perth there, or a long way from Perth. But, you know, what's the biggest accomplishment so far, you think? If you look at that quote in that quarterly report, what stands out to you, Tony?
Well, look, I mean, you're right, Lake Way, this is the first project across a portfolio of lake tenements we have, and I certainly didn't join to come and build just Lake Way. I've come to build, I suppose, this large multi-operation, multi-lake portfolio of projects in this region. So that's the big attraction, you know, for us at Lake Way at the moment. You know, we're about 4 or 5 months away from you know, commissioning at the moment. You know, we just released our quarterly there at the end of last week on Friday that shows us at the end of September at 63% total project complete. We sit here today, we're 19th October, two-thirds of the way through the month of October. We're very, very close to that 70%, I'd be guessing, at this stage, or in the high 60s percent total completion of that project. So absolutely rocketing along. That quarterly covered everything off, you know, in detail. You know, procurement items that are for this project are at 95% plus now locked in, committed. So that's the financial components associated with procurement are locked down. So the risk there of any sort of movement in that space is very, very low now. On site, they're continuing with steel, erection going up. There's tanks being fabricated and put in place. We've got deliveries coming in every day. So lots and lots of activity happening up on site. And then on lake, we've got our ponds, 440 hectares, in full operation at the moment, being fed, every second of every day by bores, of which we've got seven down into the paleo channel now. We're basically pump testing those bores. We've got 62 kilometres of trenches on the lake that's taking the surface brine and all being directed through sumps into this 440 hectares. So, it is a vast scale. It is big, big end stuff in terms of fixed infrastructure. And we are certainly rocketing along at the moment, Justin.
Yeah, yeah. And I know, you're sort of out in the sticks a bit, but, you have connections there. Like I say, you've got 4G across the site, which we don't have that in this country, in some part of the country. There's a lot of headlines at the moment about the second wave of coronavirus and it's affecting business. I mean, what's it like out there? I've heard, is Australia doing quite well, but how's it in the area you're at the moment? Is there any chance that could hold up anything or operations?
So, look, Western Australia is actually in a very quiet boom at the moment. We've seen gold going crazy, iron ore's going crazy, lots of sort of expansion, projects happening. We've got the whole potash thing, we've got lithium. So borders are closed, but, Western Australia is a very industrial state. So it has lots of skills and trade availability, lots of project delivery experience and operational experience within Western Australia. So very, very lucky. We've been confined. They refer to it, Western Australia here, as the bubble inside the bubble, WA being inside Australia. Over on the East Coast, our friends, particularly Victoria, have got a bit of challenge over there with COVID. New South Wales, not so much, a little bit. But, the rest of the states, Northern Territory, Queensland, Tasmania, South Australia, Western Australia, all going very, very well, COVID-free, basically. The only COVID cases are landing on planes and being put into quarantine under security. Yeah. So for us, it's business as usual. This project is just flying along under the radar, and we're not seeing any effect by COVID at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'd highly advise anyone interested in the company to look at your social media and also look at your presentations there, because some amazing pictures, photography to size, but quite artistic. Is that you taking the pictures, Tony?
Yeah, I'm obsessed with pictures. I think I sort of looked the other day. I've got about 9,500 photos so far against my Lake Wade photos file. I missed that opportunity in Fortescue in my past life. And, I was there for 9.5 years, built the port, built Christmas Creek Mine, absolutely went flat out and really failed in capturing all of that journey. And it's something I regret and something I swore I'll never do that again. So going overboard here. So we're work fronts are out in the bore fields, work fronts on the lake, work fronts, in the sort of process plant construction, and they're all pouring photos into a centralized drive that I go through every day, and I pick the best of those out of there. So hence, I'm sort of, they're photos from many people, some are from me as well, but yeah, sure, I really reach out to listeners here. Go onto my LinkedIn profile and have a look. That's the main one, but I also throw a few up on Twitter and Instagram as well, but just trying to keep that really, that social media, real promotional flow going so people can see, we're creating a new industry here in Western Australia. There is no potassium or potash industry in Australia. We're 100% importer. So this is for Australia and WA. It's a new industry. It's new employment. It's new taxes and royalties. And it's going to be producing a premium fertilizer that's going to be spread around the world. Our marketing offtakes are reaching 60 countries starting next year. And this is really going to put WA and Australia on the map.
Yeah, yeah, wow. I didn't realise you're on LinkedIn. I'll check that out as well. But let's go into today's news. So you've added to the board non-executive directors Phil Montgomery and Peter Thomas. And I'm looking through them, some big hitters here. And you say here, this is the part of the next evolution in SFO development as you finalise construction for Lakeway and look ahead to the steady state operations and future development of other lakes. So Phil, he's got a good track record, isn't he? Good CV.
Yeah. Look, Phil brings a deep experience in the project development space, having spent more than a couple of decades with BHP or Billiton before becoming BHP Billiton and BHP. So he brings experience there. It's the strategic thinking, the project development sort of experience, and he spent 4 years leading the BHP Jansen MOP potash project as well. So he brings that a little bit of that industry experience as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Peter Thomas there as well. You'd be impressed by his CV if he landed on your desk. So that's quite impressive there.
Yeah, so Peter, I've known Peter before. He brings deep strategic thinking. He has had quite a wide spectrum of experiences. Obviously, he started in the financial world, you know, through Lehman Brothers, et cetera, and he's been CFO roles, quite a couple of those. But he spent more than 6 years in you know, big end of town construction as a construction director at Fortescue, Adani for multi-billion dollar projects. So he brings a whole spectrum of strategic thinking, financial operations experience, and also construction experience. So, you know, it really flavors up the board. I say thank you, you know, to Mark Pierce, who's been our non-exec independent there on the board for a long time. And Mark is willingly stepping away off the board and allowing these two to come in. And yes, we are sort of expanding by one, and you're absolutely correct. So this is about us now walking into a, you know, a rapid ramp up, you know, a steady state nameplate at our first project, and then rapidly advancing onto projects two and three.
Yeah, so two and three, I mean, you've previously stated that if you get Three Lakes into operation quite quickly over the next sort of 5 years, then you're hoping to get to sort of 1 million tonnes of SOP. And, of course, if you just, that's four times pretty much what you're at the moment when you start, you know, when you're fully ramped up on Lake Way. So you can say, I mean, from a financial point of view, if that's chucking off, say, in UK pounds, say, 60 million EBITDA times up by four, that would make you, you know, valued on five times EBITDA, which is quite low, a £1 billion, over £1 billion company. Now, first of all, can the market take, you know, I don't know what the market is, it's growing, I know that, but over the next 5 years, can the market take sort of a million tonnes of SOP?
Look, I and we think it can. You know, we've been through that last year and pre-COVID this year of running our market campaign or marketing campaign out there. We secured, you know, 92% or 224,000 tonnes of offtakes. We could have settled more. The demand was very, very strong. And even since then, we've seen, you know, other companies, you know, approaching us cold to come and basically take tonnage off us. And we've had to say no. You know, we were keeping 20, 21,000 tonnes in our back pocket. I refer to it for domestic supply and opportunistic sales, you know, if different regions of the world present. So that's, we're being very sort of measured in that space. Look, CAGRs, you know, compounding annual growth rates in just standard potash at 2-3% across many analysts. If you go right up to the water soluble fertigation, it's 10-12% compound annual growth rate from analysts. So that's that, you know, the heavy cropping, cash cropping greenhouse, you know, in countries where there's terrible soil issues, you know, Mediterranean's, Middle East, a great example, Southern Europe's. So if you have a look at all these CAGRs and, you know, you can play the thematic of the growing populations, decreasing arable land, you know, shifting wants in the middle class. You know, it's an incredible thematic that does support incredible demand growth. Now you've got MOP out there as well, which has got chloride, as potassium chloride. How much will the no chloride SOP displace? I don't know the answer to that. I have no doubt there'll be some. So there's all sorts of tailwinds that are sort of, I suppose, supporting that demand story. Now, look, is it 5 years? Is it 4 years? Is it 7 years? You know, we can put another million tonnes into the market. I'm sure every sort of, you know, head or every CEO of every potash company will have a different opinion on that. But look, we're not going to flood the market. We'll manage the market. We will monitor the market, and we'll manage that supply into that market as it's required. And we are targeting the water soluble fertigation market. It is our absolute priority. It is the premium end of the market, and our product suits that. And so we'll be pushing that as fast and as hard as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, Tony. Well, one final thing, or three final things, I should say. As always, if someone's liking the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them the three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please, Tony.
I call these my three T's, Justin. So the first T I just gently touched on there prior, and that's thematics. You know, growing populations, depleting or decreasing arable lands, you know, shifting wealth patterns drives shifting, you know, diet improvements, people's wants are also increasing there. So, you know, it's this whole tailwind thematic of a feel good. And, you know, what we're doing is we're taking salt water, putting it under sunshine, making fertilizer to feed people in a very green, clean, sustainable way. So it's got beautiful thematics behind it. So that's my first tea. The second tier is technicals, whether that is, you know, the financials that you rattled off a few of those earlier on. It's you know, it's an NPV of just under 500 million Aussie dollars. It's got, you know, IRR post-tax of just under 30%, 3.5-year payback. So it's a very good financial model that's wrapped around this project. It's this particular lake that we're first developing is smothered in existing infrastructure because of the goldfields region. That's gold mining, nickel mining. We've got a goldfields highway sitting on the west edge of our project. We've got a gas line sitting on the east edge of our project. We've got a township and an airstrip on the northern edge of the lake. So it's smothered in this infrastructure that's very, very supportive of a fast delivery pathway for this project. So the whole technicals around this and the grade, I'm not going to go into the grade of the ore bodies and the brine, but we're seeing fantastic results there that are well above what we've modelled in terms of flow rates and grades. So that's the second T, that's the technicals. And if the last T is team, it's a team I've amassed here that's like no other that I've ever worked with before. So I've managed to, you know, start clean canvas, bring in people I know, bring in people I've worked with before, thousands and thousands of years of delivery experience, construction experience, commissioning experience, operations and maintenance experience. And, you know, we've got lots I've worked with and lots I haven't worked with, and it's a fantastic team that will make this happen with their eyes closed. You know, and anything that comes at us, this team can handle it. It is well and truly robust. So they're the three T's, the thematics, the technical, and the team, Justin.
Excellent stuff, and thanks to the fourth T there, Tony. Thanks, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks so much, Tony.
Appreciate it, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
Very good morning, Just. How are you, sir?
I'm good, yes. I've been having problems getting sleep. I keep waking up, you know, middle of the night, when even middle of the night, after a few hours of sleep, going to the toilet. Didn't know that. But and then thinking about things, you know, and I can't get to bed. My brain starts working up in stocks or anything like that. Thinking about, oh, hang on, I got to look at that stock or something else, you know. And I was thinking about on this weekend, I think it was Saturday morning, I woke up like, sorry, 2 o'clock in the morning, ridiculous. In the end, after an hour of, you know, tossing and turning, just went downstairs and started looking at the figures of COVID, you know, and thinking, so what is the real stats here? So I went to the NHS website and I looked up the stats of people, you know, dying pretty much. And did you know in the UK, COVID deaths under the age of 60 years of age make up just 8% of total COVID deaths? So it's under 60. That's a big chunk of population. In fact, that is, that's 50% of the entire UK population, or 51% of the UK. So only they only make up 8% of the overall COVID deaths. And 88% of these had a pre-existing health condition.
Yeah.
So it just shows you, we're locking down. I know that we worry about the NHS and all that stuff, and I don't know what it's like there. They're worrying the figures will go up. But it seems to me now we're sort of a better place to cope, because the NHS Nightingale hospitals, the capacity wasn't even taken up at all in the first wave. Why can't we cope with it this time? We've got remdesivir, we've got dexamethasone, whatever it's called, to deal with it. And we know now which are the vulnerable categories. So if you are in one of those categories, you need a shield. In fact, my son's in one of the categories. We need a shield. And of course, so I'm just thinking, I do see a lot of fear being ramped up here. And I don't know, part of me thinks it's unfounded, you know, and I think we're killing business here. And
I couldn't agree more. And Andy Burnham, the mayor of Manchester, feels the same way, which is why he's gone against the government, because I think the evidence is there. Yeah, you know, people at a certain age group without pre-existing health conditions. There's the argument there for herd immunity with people who can actually deal with it. And of course, yeah, we've identified the people with pre-existing health and respiratory conditions that that are at risk. But I think now we know that much more about the disease. I think those people in that risk group should self-isolate, but don't lock down an entire city or conurbation, because businesses are dying and the government are single-handedly killing off the economy, where I think they need to adopt a different approach. And there's always some risk. I mean, goodness me, you know, loads of people are going to get flu and die from flu this winter. But I think now the panicking and the doom mongering is still sounding like it did at the start of the year, and we know much more about the disease now. That there's no need, in my opinion, for these drastic measures.
Yeah, and it's good news out on vaccines, you know, and I think it's very. Now, I've had a couple of people attack me on because they hold COVID stock, you know, COVID testing stocks, and these hot stocks have risen. Novacyt is the king of the COVID stocks, it's earning good money. The rest of them pretty much not earning that kind of money there. Novacyt has knocked it out of the park, phenomenal. But my thoughts is this, so I'll reiterate what I think. And someone said to me, yes, but, you know, it's still 6 to 12 months left within, so there's plenty of time left for COVID tests are still needed. I said, yeah, I agree with that. I think COVID tests. It will still be around even when we've got a vaccine for 6-12 months maybe, but my thoughts are this: the more positive news we have out on vaccines, sentiment will change more negatively towards COVID testing stocks because
Absolutely.
Their shelf life becomes more evident, you know?
Yeah.
We realise if you got it, and if you look at, and people say, yeah, but it'll take years to get the vaccine out. Well, listen, it won't take years because they're saying now, they reckon AstraZeneca will have, in fact, the Professor Tam said, will have one out in New Year. And if you look at all the big companies, right, Pfizer's going to be the first to sort of report. They're saying now they'll have figures out from phase three trials mid-November. They've got 100 million doses ready to go. So it's already there. You know, so once they get FDA approval, and reckon that FDA approval coming before the end of November, so within 2 weeks of them reporting positive numbers on the phase three trial, they'll have 100 million doses ready to go before the end of the year. That'll help the vulnerable people. And yep. once you vaccinate the vulnerable people, then what's the worry? I think the sentiment towards COVID testing stocks will just slump because of course it's been at an all time high. And I said, and the guy said, yeah, I'll start to flip down. It was somebody on Twitter said, yes, I'll start to look at the bombed out sectors then maybe in the new year. So too late. Too late then. Mm. Well, you know, it's like the best time to get into COVID testing stocks was like February, March. That's the smart money went then.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gone. They've run. They've gone, you know. So,
oh, they've gone. They've gone. Yeah. Yeah, they've gone. But there are two points, really. I think, first of all, everyone should have a flu jab this year because the thing is, you know, flu knocks you for six, it lowers your immune system. So it might just be that if you've been exposed to COVID at any point and your tested COVID positive and you get flu, then the two might react together. And, you know, that could result in more fatalities over the winter months. The other thing is that, you know, the point you made about COVID stocks having had their day. Yeah, I agree. A lot of them have. But also, a lot of the larger and also, you know, small mid-cap pharma companies have had other products in the pipeline, and they've adapted to meet the COVID challenge. But as a result of the increase in the share price and the extra funding that's come in, they've now got more funding to fund and accelerate the other projects they're working on. So mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily going to impact.
I'm talking about companies who basically all they have is testing. You know, I mean,
their
share price has risen because they're about to release a test or they're getting involved. Now, some of these stocks are still haven't released their tests yet. They're not commercially available. I think, well, you better hurry up because, you know, we've got 6 to 12 months left of this, and already Novacyt have cashed in. They're making so much money. It's unbelievable. And they've done 50 times their... You could have bought them like if I look at the share price, I'm always amazed by Novacyt share price. It's like...
I know.
MCYT. Let me just look at it a second. So you could have bought this stock...
Why we love the stock market, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, AIM especially. You could have bought them on 30th of January. If you were sharp, of course, we started knowing about the disease then. It was in China happening, you know? And any whiff of pandemic sends things nuts. So literally 7 pence you could have bought them for on the 30th of January. They are now £9.26.
Oh, that's incredible.
I know.
Yes. I mean...
Even after the hype, though, you know, you could have... It's like they've risen quite a bit, but you could have bought them like at... what's the score there? £2.20 on the 16th of June. It's in June, and they're still £9.30 now. So, you know, I hyped up, it came back, then it rose again. And so, but now, of course, I just think the sentiment is all in there. It's all priced in. And I think time to look now at other segments, even, you know, hospitality, leisure stocks that are good companies beforehand. And maybe now they'll start to make a move. The more positive news we get on... If you look at, you know, for example, AstraZeneca, they're saying they've already got, let's look at the doses here. Let me just look at this. AstraZeneca, they reckon, will come out with a vaccine in the new year. But they've already got, I'm just trying to find the picture I'm looking at. Right, AstraZeneca. So they reckon they'll have 400 million doses ready to go when approval is ready. So they've already got stockpiled 400 million doses. They'll have 2 billion by next year. So, like I said, you know, and they're just one of many companies here ready to go to get this out there. So they're saying the safety isn't a problem. The safety test has gone well. These people are already testing hundreds of thousands of people, you know, so altogether these companies, the safety isn't a problem. It's just how effective it'll be, and they're hoping to get to 60% effectiveness. So that will help, you know, the vulnerable people. Once the vulnerable people are helped and protected, then, of course, we can sort of unlock, you know, pretty much everything.
I think so. I think we can start to get back to normal, and I think now you know Manchester is a great case in point. You know, you've got Burnham is protesting there that it's completely unfair, it's unfounded, the data doesn't support it, and as with the data as you've just described on the NHS website, then you know something's got to be done. I think the government they're playing super safe, but actually, you know, we're entering a time of flu now. Get a flu jab and then you'll be protected against the worst ravages that, that the flu can bring. And also it will protect you indirectly against COVID too, because, yep. I mean, your immune system is stronger. So, that's the most important thing. But
92% of COVID, total COVID deaths in the UK are above the age of 60. 95% of these had pre-existing health conditions. So even if you're healthy over 60, you're pretty much okay-ish. It's only if you've got a pre-existing health condition you should be worried. So 95% of those people, so 5% for some reason, obviously you can't tell if the data's accurate on that, but 95% had a pre-existing health condition, even above 60, but there was 92% of that category passed away. So below 60, pretty much non-existent, you know, if you're healthy. Right, cool. Let's go to stocks. So, sorry, take a bit of time. So I've got 15 minutes. Stocks. Five minutes per stock.
Well, Mr. Stock. Okay, first one is Exico, IXI. Shares are traded as high as 97p on the year, as low as 43p. Currently got a market cap of 44 million. Exico, they provide artificial intelligence and data analytics for neuroscience, working on a number of diseases, of course, including Parkinson's, Alzheimer's disease, and Huntington's disease, multiple sclerosis, and PSP, which is progressive supranuclear palsy. The company's been run very well and very carefully, and it became profitable last year, first year since the admission to AIM. But it's just put out a very, very strong set of results. I say the results, it's a trading update ahead of the full year results. But its revenues have rocketed to 44 million. They're up 5%. The year-end order book is up 36% to 21 million. Cash of just under 8 million at the bank, which is up 9%, and the company completely debt-free. They reckon EBITDA is going to double to 1.1 million at least, and all this has been achieved despite considerable disruption to the trials that the company have been undertaking and running through the year. Through the year, the company have secured a 2 million contract extension to a 10.5 million contract extension to develop biomarkers and digital and blood biomarkers for Huntington's disease. Collaboration with the MSA, Multiple System Atrophy, with Langone Health, and an Alzheimer's trial awarded by Global Alzheimer's Platform, again to provide digital blood and biomarkers. And the company said, CEO Giulia Cironi, not Gabriele Cironi from Tiziana, of course, Giulia Cironi said, "We continue to invest even though the tests will be disrupted during 2021. The outlook is very good for the company." One of the chief science officer, Dr. Robin Voltz, is presenting today at a conference concerning ataxia, which of course is the condition where there's a loss of voluntary muscle movement. But great revenue generation by the company, very strong year-end order book with great forward visibility for 2021 and 2022, 8 million cash at the bank and debt-free, and that cash pile has actually risen. So a lot of companies involved at this level, the numbers would be very much the other way around, but that's a very strong performance by Exico, and this was raised actually or brought to my attention some time ago by a gentleman who I'm connected to on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And I had a look at the company, and it's a really, really strong growth story. And I think when you've got a company like this that is debt free, growing the cash pile in the bank, that's a great recipe for growth.
I like it highly. I had them on the podcast. I like them a lot, and the reason why I didn't get involved is because the management don't have much skin in the game. I thought, come on, if you can really do well here, why didn't you get skin in the game? So that always puts me off. I always like to see skin in the game a little bit, you know. But sometimes it doesn't matter, you know. Whilst it doesn't matter, it's always nice to have that. But it's not be all end all, and the share price can go nuts even if the management don't have skin in the game. So it shouldn't be the final decision, really. It should be a part of the puzzle, you know. But there we are. It's done very well. And do you know what? Every time I look at a chart, though, of any company, it's almost like that big dip in March was the time to buy. You know, so many opportunities have been missed there.
You could have bought anything then, quite frankly.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Anyway, go on, next one, yeah. Al. What's the next one?
Okay, so the next one is a company I spoke about over a year ago now, but I've always liked this company. This is a real homegrown British success story. Anthony Best Dynamics, AB Dynamics. ABDP is the epic code. This company is the world's most trusted supplier of automotive testing systems. Founded in 1982, there's a great sort of a great section on the website, if you go to AB Dynamics website, where you can see all the early testing and some of the first contract awards. But the company's literally sort of broken ground every time. It's always been the first to market with the development. So the company, as the name implies, it provides systems for durability testing, precision control, a lot of artificial intelligence for active safety, and of course autonomous driving that we're now seeing. The suspension parameter measurement machine, we're first to market with that for car manufacturers, tire test labs and tire companies. And it's driving robots, of course. You see the crash test dummies and you see the driving robots and the Google cars. They're all AB Dynamics products. So this company really provides the backbone for the automotive industry testing and development. Suspension, chassis, steering, vehicle dynamics, and then, of course, next generation systems and production. So the company moved recently to a new premises at Bradford on Avon, and of course this client include the top 25 global vehicle manufacturers and also specialist vehicle manufacturers like McLaren and Williams, and all seven of the Euro NCAP safety testing laboratories use AB Dynamics systems. So you know this is a company that is at the forefront of motoring technology at every level, and I'm sure you know there's a lot of involvement with the company or by the company with the new EV manufacturing processes too. So a trading update was published last month. This is in the run-up to the results on November 25th. Cash of $31 million at the bank, following investment into the new premises and also further product development. The company has made progress during the despite COVID disruption. Acquisitions it made last year betting in well, and although it suspended the dividends early this year in line with a lot of companies because of COVID uncertainty, the company said in September on the trading statement that it would be reinstated at the year end. So you know, for long-term shareholders, for people looking at investing into what is very much a niche offering. Of course, if you look at the chart of AB Dynamics, you'll see the drop-off that we just discussed that took place in March. But since then, it's been top right-hand corner stuff all the way.
Yeah, again, if you bought then in March, you would have 10 quid a share you could have bought for, and it's now £21.50.
Oh, nice. £21.50 a share, that's it. Shares have traded size 28.50, and that was, of course, at the end of last year. But it's expecting revenues in the range of 60, 62 million. And although second half revenues fell, the order intake has now recovered and gross margins are expected to be ahead of last year, which is a phenomenal performance considering. But great British company, ABDP, pays a dividend as well. So what's not to like?
Yes, exactly. Marvellous stuff. Yes, yeah. Looking good in the chart. Anything else? What's next, Al?
Okay, yes. Mentioned this company a while ago. It's AB, sorry, not AB Dynamics, it's Stanley Oil Energy. AB Dynamics again, yes, that's right, yes, a second run. San Leon Energy, SLE is the epic code. Now, the company has a number of interests. Nigeria, it's got a small interest in Ireland and the North Celtic Sea, had interest in Poland, which it sold most of the concessions to Horizon Petroleum, Netherlands and Albania. But the flagship and really what the company is all about is the OML 18 well, which is close to Shell Bonny Terminal. terminal in the Niger Delta. And it's been quite a year for the company. It returned $66 million to shareholders through the year and paid out a special dividend of $33 million in May. This is on the back of loan note repayments. And at the year end, had a cash balance of $36 million. When it reported interims in September, the cash balance was more or less the same, but it had made an additional investment, so some of the funds were tied up in escrow at that point.
What do they do?
Okay, so Sandio Energy, they have a stake in the OML-18 oil well.
Oh,
in
you
Nigeria.
Swore! You said oil. Yeah. You can't say that word anymore. And then oil is banned these days. Well, that's disgusting. Yeah,
think of it as a contrarian trade.
Oil. You mentioned oil. You don't mention that word. I put parental advisory on the podcast. That's the way it is. That's the way it is at the moment. You know, oil is becoming such a naughty word. You know, it's like the biggest theme in investing these days is ESG, environmental, social, and corporate governance. You know, and part of that is like oil is such the sentiment is so low, like you say, on oil and gas. Not gas, but oil. It is going to become a contrarian play. I think once we have a vaccine, this is one of the bombed out sectors. I'm not going to invest in oil companies. But you know, if you are a holder of an oil company, I think what's going to happen is like, well, what we've seen, you know, lack of oil prices. What happens is this: they go through a boom and bust cycle because when the oil price is down, all the companies tighten their purse strings and do, you know, less exploration, you know. So then when the oil price rises, then there's more demand, basically. The economies lift up and start, you know, chugging along nicely. People obviously want more oil. And then they realize, oh, hang on, we've got a supply because we haven't been investing in exploration. And so they realize the supply isn't there. The share price goes nuts and everyone starts investing in oil exploration again, floods the market with oil, and then the share price goes down again. So, but what's going to happen at the moment? We got a double whammy here, I believe. We got, obviously, everything slowed down. People haven't been going to work pretty much. And, you know, you've got a lot of people not filling their cars up because there's homeworking going on around the world. So a massive, you know, glut of oil here. But, you know, once we sort of get back to normal the next 6 months, and of course, it may take a while for the fundamentals to match up, but the market, it always reacts ahead of time, doesn't it? So I think we are due a squeeze on the oil price in the next 6 months. I think it'll just rally quickly. So though I won't be investing in oil stocks, I think there's lots of opportunity in oil stocks, you know?
Once the airlines start to fly again, you know, if you drive anywhere, then the roads are still pretty busy, but the pumps are busy again. But certainly for travel across the world, you know, air travel in particular, there is a squeeze in the oil price. But surprisingly for San Leon Energy, they continue producing just under 30,000 barrels of oil per day throughout the year from OML-19. And they have invested $15 million of that cash pile into Energy Link Malta, they've invested into an oil export system, which I think, put simply, is basically a giant pipeline from the OML field out to a floating storage and offloading vessel in the Niger Delta, so they can get the oil straight to the floating storage facility. The tankers can load up and off they go. They also invested into a company called Declar, which has an interest in the Oza oil field, which is another former Shell oil field in Nigeria. And Ozan Fanning, the CEO, who I should say bought 98 million shares at 21p early this year as well, said the Oza transaction is in line with the company investing into assets with near-term cash flow and the option to scale up. So they look set, once OZA comes online, they look set to increase their production. If we're at the if the oil, there is a squeeze on the oil price, then I think you can expect to see San Leon Energy head north. It's recovered as the other stocks have recovered from the dip off in March, but shares are trading fairly flat at the moment. But this is a company with a big cash pile and a great asset in Nigeria, so certainly one to watch.
Yep, if you're into oil, if you think it's a swear word, then obviously stay away. I do apologise. I do apologise for swear words on this podcast. Word. Lovely.
No children or animals were hurt in the making of this podcast.
Unlike in the production of oil, which maybe lots of people have been hurt. There we go. It's the old word. I do apologise if you're offended. Al, thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Cheers, Charles. Speak to you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, On the Market, PLC. I did cover that in my weekend video. Check out. I did four companies, I believe, have a roadmap to 10x in value. At four, Alien Metals. At three, Omega Diagnostics. So, in fact, what's writing it? On the Market's up 10%, Tom went 5% to 105. Alien Metals up 21% to 2.95. At three, Omega Diagnostics down 2.5% to 96 pence. At two, Bezant Resources. It's gone berserk, berserk. It's up 51% to 0.37. And at one, it's Ferro Alloy Resources up 22.86% to 10.75. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Landor Resources. Drilling commences at BAM Gold Project. At four, Salt Lake Potash. And that's added to the operational and potash experience added to the board. I've chatted with Tony about that. At three, Omega Diagnostics. UK RTC contract for the supply of goods. At two, Redcentric. Restitution scheme update, down 3% there, 128. And at one, it's Symphony Environmental. That's his largest bakery in Turkey, launches D2W packaging. That's a big deal. That's a big, you know, Turkey has about 80 million population. And this company supplies 81 cities with that thing. So I think that's quite a big deal there. Obviously, we won't know about the financial you know, impression that will make until final results come out, and I assume it's over several years. So, but that's definitely headed in the right direction there. I do hold the company. I like their tech. I like their products. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing further updates. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.